And you're listening to Saturday Morning Live, and this is Mally, aka DocuVixen. We're just going to get set up. We're going to actually, we haven't done this in a while. We're going to do a freestyle and go through sort of, just like the issues of the day kind of thing. Do you guys want to? Yep.
Sound check.
Yep. You guys are on.
Okay.
I heard the crack. Yeah, snap, crackle, and pop.
So we haven't done this actually in a long time.
It's been a little while.
Yeah. So there's like a lot of things going on in Toronto on the municipal level. It's kind of been sort of a circus for the past. Month? When did the controversy start? I can't even remember. Yeah, it's been a month.
What's the latest on, what is the issue? I was listening to 1010, which is one of commercial station, a private station that is conservative, but the most conservative station, I believe, in this city is 640. But they were talking about the Ford scandal and, the whole crack allegation, so on and so forth. But this guy has not said that he has never used crack. He says he doesn't use crack and he's not a crack addict. Let's talk about, what's taking place right now in terms of where it stands today.
How it came about was there was this alleged video that was floating around. Gawker kind of spilled the beans, and then we're followed up by the Star, and so now it's being said by like Gawker they can't find the video.
Yeah, they said the guy who recorded the video wants to be left alone, or he can't be found, or there's these conflicting reports
that there's no more video. So that's where at with the video. Now, I think the fact that his whole office left. Is really telling.
Yeah, I think it was six people, six staffers. He either
fired or
resigned once this story broke. So it gives you the sense that something's there.
Yeah,
but it does seem though that Ford's on a bit of a rally. I mean, he's not one to just give up. He seems to be. Fighting back, and he still seems to have his supporters in Toronto. Last I had checked, his approval ratings haven't really. They did a poll, and they said if he were to run, if the election were right now, the only person it seems who would be able to beat him is Olivia Chow. So you have this kind of silent minority. I don't know if they're quite a majority. Who they seem to be unfazed by all these stories, and I think. Until we get that hard evidence, it's still going to be an issue as to what's really happening and has he really done. Right now, it's still very much allegation and speculation.
That's why I think, I go back and forth and sort of where, the sort of like the allegation is important and we should think, but I mean, really, should that be, a focus?
Well, I was listening, like I said, to this radio station yesterday, and this is not, like I say, this station 1010 is not the most backward station. It's very backward, mind you. But the callers were basically saying, even if he did use crack, they didn't care because he's doing such a fine job now. I mean, that was a majority thought. Now, yesterday the news came out and said that. Ford is heralding the fact that the city's 2012 budget has a surplus $248 million, and that they are he's basically on the offense with this kind of stuff. He was on, I think, on he had a press conference where he was talking about the Toronto housing, the bigging himself up for doing the work that he supposed allegedly have done around Toronto public housing. And he is talking about he's campaigning. He's basically starting to campaign. I mean, this guy is on the offensive, it looks like.
Yeah, that's why. That's where I'm saying is that instead of, you know, kind of searching for this video, I mean, like, I think this is epidemic with the left, is that we're constantly reacting to what the right does, and we don't have our own sort of, you know, strategy. It's just like, let's react to whatever is coming down, and we don't have, a practical offense, really. Like, right. So.
Well, it seems like in some sense this was the offense, but it wasn't particularly thorough, you know, because the story came out before the actual video came out. Like, there's a story about how we're going to get this evidence, opposed to like, bam, here's the evidence.
Yeah,
right. And so that really kind of gave Ford is a real, you know, Ford and his supporters an opportunity to really go on the offensive, you know. So they're really saying, oh, this is an outrage and there's no evidence and all these allegations, and making his enemies look kind of like they don't know what they're doing, you know, at least in the eyes of those people who support him. So it's comes down to strategy, and you have to wonder exactly how this was orchestrated. Like, I'm pretty sure. I mean, I wouldn't say sure, but there's something happening. You know, there's likely something there. But in terms of how things were have been executed, execution thus far has not been particularly good, and it looks like it might. I don't know. It could potentially have a counter effect in a sense.
Yeah. Well, I really kind of, you know, question if this really did come from the left. I really think that there's key people, former allies that. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I question where this whole, like, hoopla is coming from.
Well, Gerald, I'm sorry for cutting.
No, go ahead.
No, Gerald Horn is basically saying it's coming. It's a split within their camp.
Yeah.
And he is turning out to be such a buffoon, or
he's becoming a liability.
He's a liability, and Olivia Child will be the next mayor of Toronto. That's what some people are saying.
Oh, I think if she runs, I think if she ran in the last election, she would have won. I mean, it's always, you know, I think it's been hers to have if she so wanted. It could quite possibly be an internal thing. But, I mean, we on the left, we certainly jumped all over it.
Yeah, no, it's true.
You know, and it's a situation where there is, like I said, again, I think there's a lot more going on, a lot more than the pestle, as my mom would say. But it's like we didn't get that concrete evidence, you know, and that makes a big difference and gives him an opportunity to spin his new staff to spin this to his advantage. So we'll see how this unfolds. It's been a really wild ride in municipal politics over the last few weeks because of this story.
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
So Norman, it's Black Music Month.
Mm-hmm.
Where are we at since Mayor Miller like declared it, and where we are now? What's the status of Black Music Month?
I have tried to get a proclamation from Rob Ford for the last 2 years. He has not responded. I have friends at City Council, and it's also been suggested that I talk to Michael Thompson and get him to do it, since he is my brother. I was told by, I don't want to mention the name, but go to Michael Thompson, and I haven't heard back from anyone. But it looks like Black Music Association, is coming out of the United States, but Black Music Month was proclaimed by President Jimmy Carter in 1979. But the people that proposed the whole concept of Black Music Month, they were talking about Black music from Africa, the Caribbean, and North America. It was never perceived as an American or African-American thing. It was really projected as a worldwide thing because the Black Music Association helped put together concerts, many concerts with Bob Marley and the Wailers and Stevie Wonder. One in New Orleans, and you know, Bob Marley and Stevie Wonder had a relationship even before that. But the Black Music Association took advantage of that particular relationship and tried to project the unity of Black musics as opposed to just this American thing.
Right.
And President Barack Hussein Obama in 2009. Basically, just changed Black Music Month to African American Music Appreciation Month. So what he did was he took international music and basically nationalized it. So instead of highlighting Marion McCabe and Peter Tosh and Sparrow and Calypso Rose, we're only going to talk about Aretha. Right. Not even Aretha, but Beyonce, Rihanna. But she's from the Caribbean, I guess. So he could, if he would really want to be crazy, he could do that. But I mean, you know, just people in the Jay-Z, who is Buddy.
Yeah.
And it has. Then he put Caribbean American Caribbean Music Heritage Month. He made that June as that month, which you can't argue with that. But he could have chosen another month. But
so he basically put an American flag on it.
Yeah, right, right.
Well, I mean, listening to the interview earlier with Kalina Phillips, it was interesting to hear going back hundreds of years, like the conflict between 100 years. And it's not, let me not exaggerate, between the conflict in naming between like the Black Methodist Episcopal Church,
BME, British, right, it's
and
British.
Oh, I thought it was Black. B stands for British?
Yeah, British, right.
Sweet. And then, and the African Methodist Episcopal Church.
Right.
Right, and how people, they kind of shift these names around and shift these identifications around it in response to who knows what. But there seems to be this idea of we can't claim here if we're also looking to other places, you know? And right. So perhaps with this thing with Obama, one of the things is consolidating a kind of American identity through Blackness, you know, and claiming, encouraging, you know, African descended people to claim America and kind of limit their focus to America in terms of shaping their identity, opposed to looking all over the world or looking internationally. And I mean, Pan-Africanism has kind of fallen out of favor. I mean, it's still alive, underwrites some people's emotional connections, but there's also this idea of, well, you know, we're here now and that was then, this is now, and let's just grow up and accept that we're Canadian and accept that we're American and or accept that we're whatever and stop with that kind of transnational sense of identification.
But I think I agree, but I think one of the factors was the 9/11 scared a lot of African people who live in North America. I mean, the people in the United States has changed so much since I lived there. For example, Chokwe Lumumba is the mayor of Jackson, Mississippi. Now, Jackson, Mississippi is a town now that is predominantly Black, but the Black people in Jackson, Mississippi are not just born in America. The people in Jackson, Mississippi are from the Caribbean, from Africa, and you have a lot of Latinos in Jackson, Mississippi. So it's not, you know, in Jackson, Mississippi, I was in Jackson, Mississippi in 1978-79, and I went there again when my grandmother passed away in 1982, and it was predominantly, you know, basically it was black and white. So Chokwe winning the whole question of Jackson, Mississippi, it's the whole it's shifted in terms of the we're in a different period of history now.
Mm. Did you want to talk about a little bit more about the election?
Oh,
in Mississippi.
Well, the election is he won the election. He was underfunded. He ran. Some people have criticized him because he ran on the Democratic Party ticket, but people have said he ran on the Freedom Democratic Party ticket, which was the party ticket of Fannie Lou Hamer. And now I don't know whether or not he could have ran as an independent. I don't know, but that's one issue. But he won by a huge margin, and he is a known radical. I mean, he's part of the new Malcolm X grassroots organization. He was part of the Republic of New Africa. He is an attorney who defended Tupac Shakur and I'm trying to figure out who is his other client was, might have been Asata. He's also, you know, the Republic of New Africa has had confrontations with the police in Detroit. They've had confrontations with the police in Jackson, Mississippi. And for whatever it's worth, the Republic of New Africa has always came out. They've won those particular scrimmages. So I was really surprised that I was not looking for him to win. But I think the climate, like I say, the demographic is changing. It's only one city. It's Jackson, Mississippi. Jackson, Mississippi is the town that Medgar Evers was assassinated in 50 years ago. So you're going to have, and that's, they're going to have June the 11th, 50 years ago, that's when Medgar Evers was assassinated. So there's a whole lot of history in this whole Jackson, Mississippi situation.
Yeah. What else is there? Despite the hoopla that there is in Toronto, there is like sort of overall scandal hitting the federal government as well. What is your impressions around sort of all this thing around the Senate?
Well, could you explain the Senate situation as well as? As the, because I have a problem. When I say I have a problem, listening to people, you should set. The issue is the there's corruption in the Canadian Senate. Mike Duffy got his bill paid for what $90,000?
Yeah, there's a question of where in the Senate you get appointed to a seat.
Appointed, not elected. Appointed
no,
by,
you get appointed by right. the ruling right. party. So they were both. There's a question with Mike Duffy and also Pam Wallen.
Right.
And they were both appointed by
Stephen Harper's
Conservatives. So there's a question of residency, primary residency.
Right.
So his primary residency is on the books in Prince Edward Island, but the majority of time he stays in Ottawa. So there's been questions around basically his living expenses and also just various travel expenses. And then there were sort of things while they were campaigning. There's questions around that. So there's like a whole bunch of questions about, first of all, he's never in PEI. $90,000, I think, is unaccounted for.
Right. And Pamela Wallen is, I heard she was living, she spends most of her time in Toronto, I believe.
And her seat is in Saskatchewan.
Saskatchewan, right.
Right. So anyway, I was just, you know, just wondering about, you know, the whole Senate. And if you look at the sort of, you know, the two houses, and it's basically the Senate is sort of like the House of, it was taken from the House of Lords in UK.
Right.
Which is, you know, the home of the aristocrats in England. So if you think about the Senate in that way, it kind of actually makes sense. All the...
I find it's one of those things where I'm kind of like, okay, the Senate's corrupt, and...
Yeah, I know, you know, that's like...
The way that really, it was set up in a way, like, they don't really do anything. They're not particularly accountable, and they don't actually have to show up for work. So it's like...
yeah, they kind of act as aristocrats in Canada.
Yeah, they don't really... And it's just kind of like prestige position. So that the idea that, you know, someone's funneling the money, or allegedly is funneling the money, you know, it's... I understand how it could have political implications, particularly for a party that is based on, you know, tightening the belt.
Yeah, and exactly.
Projecting this moral image.
Right.
But in terms of like a larger kind of politic, it's not like shocking. You know, well, it's not going to...
I remember when Senator Ann Coles got... she was appointed by Pierre Elliott Trudeau. Mm-hmm. And Ann Coles went to Oakland, California at a time the Black Panther Party was just beginning to ferment. And I understand she met David Hilliard and a lot of the leadership of the Black Panther Party. And they were impressed by this woman from, sister from Toronto, Canada, who quoted C.L.R. James. She quoted Karl Marx and Mr. Lenin and Trotsky and what's his name? Vladimir Ilyich Lenin, so on and so forth. And... she went to prison, you know, for the situation in Montreal. I guess it was McGill University or Sir George at that particular time. Mm-hmm. She served her time along with Rosie Douglas, who went on to become the Prime Minister of Dominica, and a number of other people. She was appointed senator, you know, by
Trudeau. Yeah.
By Trudeau, but I'm just
she
saying
still
this.
Is, yeah.
But she's in a different headspace now. But I'm just saying, these whole senator, these senators are that we're talking about now that are in really in hot water, are appointees of what's his name of Harper.
And
Justin Trudeau is basically saying it's interesting. I think that I don't know what the NDP has said, but I know the Liberal Party saying
actually came out with a whole like statement around the controversy the mm-hmm. other day,
But I'm saying Justin Trudeau is not for the abolition of the Senate. Some people, like I think the majority, I wouldn't say the majority, but a lot of people that live in Canada, Canadians, are saying, "What's this deal about Senate? You know, get rid of, like you were saying, scrap it."
More or less. I think Justin Trudeau was saying that it was promising transparency.
Right.
Whereas, you know, all of the expenses, et cetera, will be posted online. Which is, if you take in consideration Canada's telecommunications capacity, where I think you have like 80% of the population has, you know,
access to
internet, you have to wonder why these things aren't made more available, you know, in terms of we don't necessarily respond. We don't hold people accountable in that way. And even the ideas of like, you know, expanding participatory democracy where you have people voting on issues opposed to just saying, okay, well, we're going to put this one person in power because, you know, we're also dispersed and we're going to let this one person represent us. It's like we could technically be voting on every issue if we so chose. Trudeau seems to be moving in that direction, and I think the Tories were receptive to that. You know, so we'll see what happens in that regard. It's, to me, it's just kind of like, it's a very interesting, the Senate position is, appointments are very interesting in that people seem to get rewarded. Like my concern with this is, Wallen and Duffy, they both are media people.
Yeah. Correct. Right.
They were
CTV people.
They were campaigning also.
Right.
And they're so it's kind of like a reward, you know?
Rewards.
It's
like
which you,
you reward know, for being licky-licky towards the yeah, right.
I wouldn't have used that phrase, but that's it's like somewhat appropriate, I guess, right? So it's like, yeah, so, you know, you do right by us, you know? We're going to put you in this nice...
Licky-licky, like, yammy-yammy.
like, yeah, you could retire in the Senate.
Right, right.
Darn to say, you're gonna get 70, 75 grand a year for doing...
For life,
for not really doing much. And, you know...
You get perks with it.
You'll get perks. And so that's part of the concern, you know, with this whole thing and what kind of... how that influences people's decisions in the media or in whatever other fields in terms of, you know, how governments might reward them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I think, something that hasn't made it much into the conversation, but I think is
Exactly. Like, it's a, you know...
underlying drivers in terms of people's concerns.
The CTV is pipeline to Senate.
Well, what about the deleted emails coming from the liberal parties. Can we talk about that? Apparently, when I left and went to California, the premier of Ontario was Dalton McGuinty, and when I came back, I hadn't really been following Canadian politics like I should have. We have Kathleen Wynne is the premier of Ontario now, and apparently. There was a whole lot of things that were, you know, happening, and her office was deleting these emails. Yeah. And what exactly could you explain? What happened?
I guess it's a mass deletion of the Ontario gas plant emails by senior.
And that was a scandal,
staff.
Right?
Yes, that came out actually this week. Was it this week?
Yes,
yeah. I think so.
So there's allegations from, you know, opposition, that there should be, the Ontario Provincial Police have launched a criminal probe into the destruction of emails, about the cancellation of two gas plants by, senior liberal staff. The province's, privacy watchdog issued a scathing report this week saying they broke the law by deleting emails and canceled gas plants in Oakville and Mississauga.
Well,
so the OPP are basically investigating.
Well, I find it interesting. I wonder if you could even really delete emails because they exist somewhere.
I thought, wait a minute, I don't want to cut you, but I thought, well, I'm like you. You're supposed to be able to get emails. I mean, they got people that can.
But I think it's also, it depends on where your server is. I mean, if you are part of an internal server, you can disappear emails.
Oh, okay.
On the back end. You know what I mean? Because they would be on the Ontario government site.
Yeah, I guess they're not using Gmail,
right?
It's
not Gmail, right?
Apparently, like, no. I heard this morning that the staff now has changed the emails to Gmail.
Oh.
That was on the news this morning, right?
Oh, so that it is, yeah, it could be tracked?
No, I'm talking about the new email. I don't know whether that could be tracked, but they had to have some way to communicate with people. So instead of going Canada GA or whatever, or CA, what is it, Government of Canada?
Ontario Government.
Yeah.
.ca,
right? Instead of that, they have Gmail accounts.
Because their server is being under investigation.
I have no idea.
Yeah, something like that.
Even like, I don't know, my computer, technical computer knowledge is pretty slim. But, you know, if a hard drive crashes, you can do things to recover the data. I imagine a server would have a similar dynamic, you know.
Yeah.
So I wonder if they could actually ever really get rid of those emails. And it's interesting that we have corruption on three levels of government simultaneously. We scored the trifecta here, you know. It's like, yeah, federally, provincially, and municipally, there's, you know, Ford is alleged, right? So we don't know for certain. But something's going on, it seems. So, it's this kind of crisis of government in a sense.
Yeah.
And it seems that people's reactions, for the most part, has been like, oh, well, can you believe what they're doing? Shake your head and continue with life, you know? But this is major because you're looking at, I mean, $270 million, that's you can do a lot with that money, you know, and that's taxpayer money.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the things that happened in the Senate kind of pale by comparison in terms of actual figures.
Yeah.
But the seems that the Ontario scandal in a monetary sense is the one that is the really big one, and
yeah.
There seems to be little accountability, you know.
And it's interesting, you know, like, you know, we had a premier that just kind of was like, I'm out.
Well, you know,
so I was wondering, like, yeah, like, how far back does this go?
Yeah, who just resigns, you know?
Yeah,
like, I mean,
I'm out. I'm peace. I just got elected, but I'm out, you know? Like,
I just won. I won, and I'm out of here. Thank you. Yeah. Mike Harris, he resigned too.
That's true.
You know, so I don't know. Is this an Ontario thing? And then there was some scandal around them in the, you know, alleged $5.6 billion, you know, that couldn't quite be accounted for in budgets. And so it's kind of like, it seems as though when some things get a little sticky, these guys will say, okay, well, I'm out. Someone else is going to take this.
Yeah.
Take the heat for this. And now Wynn has to deal with this issue. At least it's left on her.
Yeah.
It seems.
Well, I remember being introduced to Mr. Dalton McGuinty by the Honorable Alvin Curling. And I remember the Honorable Alvin Curling speaking at the University of Toronto with Khalid Muhammad on a platform with Khalid Muhammad, believe it or not. And he referred to Dalton McGuinty as Marcus Garvey. He compared Dalton McGuinty to Marcus Garvey.
This Alvin Curling did this.
Yes, in front of maybe 1,000 people, and you know, this guy Dalton McGuinty, he was not that. He was, I guess, he's on Facebook. He befriended everybody on including myself, on I haven't checked it. Maybe he's off of Facebook now, but. I always found him to be kind of distant and he was kind of bland, you know. He didn't have any charisma to me.
Yeah, not much. He wasn't that typical charismatic politician, you know. And I remember when he ran against Harris, I think the first time, and he lost. And I was annoyed that the Liberals hadn't chosen Gerard Kennedy. Not because I think Gerard Kennedy was necessarily a better politician, but
he was more charismatic.
He was more charismatic, and he really would provide a nice counter to what the kind of corporate conservative that Harper was. You know, somebody who, you know, run the food banks, etc. You know, it would have been made excellent optics. But Dalton McGuinty won the federal leadership, and it took him four years to win the election. But he seemed to me certain ways solid. Because, like, do you really want a politician who's all charisma, per se? But, yeah, I understand what you're saying with that whole distant thing. He didn't seem to be that, you know, kind of, I don't know, touchy-feely man of the people type, per se.
Yeah. No, and he definitely wasn't Marcus.
You know, and he wasn't Marcus Garvey, no.
You know who else stepped away, too, was Mulroney. Didn't he do the same thing?
Did he? Yeah, that's how Kim Campbell got in, and then
yeah.
Trudeau stepped down. Man, a lot of Canadian politicians quit.
They just like, throwing peace the towel. Shit's coming up the pipe. I'm out.
How many American presidents? We always do this thing as Canadians, and we always compare ourselves to Americans. Yeah. So they say that's part of our inferiority complex. But, I mean, they're the closest. Yeah. They're our neighbors, right? So, like, how many American presidents have said, you know what, 3 years,
there's been a few. Been a few. There's, I'm trying to figure out, Nixon.
Nixon. But he was kicked out.
Yeah, but he was being impeached.
He's impeached.
It's Watergate kind of, you know.
Mm-hmm. No, but I mean, he, there have been some examples, but I don't have my real thinking cap on it. You need Gerald Horn for that question.
Yeah.
Let's call back Gerald.
We'll ask him that next time. Yeah, that's interesting. Yep. I just thought about that. I forgot about Mulroney.
For me, anyway, the larger point is, like, what's the threshold? You know, because we seem to be in this constant state of, like, oh, my gosh, can you believe what happened? Oh, well, there's nothing we can do. You know, the most people. I mean, of course, there's always this kind of activist element in Canadian politics. But, like, here we have scandal after scandal. Now we have like three synchronized scandals. And people are just kind of like, well, what you going to do, you know? Hopefully, maybe it's just something they're absorbing and we're going to see some changes in terms of how people operate politically on the horizon. But it's, you know, if you're looking at it from a governmental vantage point, it's kind of like, wow, look at how much the people will take.
Well, I wanted to change the subject and talk about this whole somebody's watching you, the situation with the
NSA.
Facebook and Google being Obama admitting that they are monitoring people through that. And, I find it very strange at a time when you have so many African people in power. We have Judge Clarence Thomas. I mean, he's Supreme Court judge. I think he's has Georgia roots. We have the Mr. The Bajan brother from what's the guy's name?
You know, it's Holder.
Jeffrey Holder. I'm thinking about Jeffrey Holder is a dancer, but I can't even think the guy's name. Holder, then Obama, the Kenyan brother, the Luo brother, then we have Susan Rice. It looks like at a time when America is under the gun, they have African people in power. So, it's like, I've always thought that Obama was elected. One of the reasons Obama was elected was because you can't have a white American man. You couldn't. You can have one now. But, I mean, at the time when Obama became elected president, a white American man
wouldn't fly.
Bush
had just ruined it for
right.
for the white man, I guess, in that regard, in terms of the optics of it all. And certainly, I think it's when you have this kind of when you have this people of color enacting, imperialist conservative tactics, it kind of sometimes puts people a little while to adjust,
since there are African people in those positions of power. The point I'm making is that a white politician could not have gotten away with that right now.
Not in the same way, because who was saying it that, Mumia was saying is like, because you see this black person with this particular story who kind of signals in these kind of ways, who's culturally aware, who has this beautiful family, all this, it's more likely to get acquiescence from people who've historically challenged the government. It creates other kinds of adversaries as well. I think that, if you look at some of the militia and Klan activities in the South and how that's ramping up, I think that's a direct response to Obama being president. But Gerald also talked about Frederick Douglass being an emissary for Haiti in support of America co-opting Hispaniola, right?
Yeah.
So you've always had progressive African people working in these kind of imperial capacities for the United States. You know, like that's just part of a tradition that we don't often talk about or was recently obscured by the, more recent kind of radical politics of the 60s. But it's something that's been, I think, pretty consistent if you look through history.
Oh, yeah. Even my ultimate, I had a tendency to even idolize Malcolm X at one time. Named my son after Malcolm twice, Omowale and Malik. But Malcolm X is still my man. But he made a deal with them, those reactionary Saudi Arabians. I mean, with the Saudis are some of the most backward people. The leadership I'm talking about are some of the most backward folks on the planet Earth. They straight up collaborators with imperialism. I mean, and they are, supplying, the right wing Muslims that are fighting against progress, and we have to really look at class as well as race, I think.
Oh yeah, certainly.
Yeah.
But yet, at the same time, you had 19 of the 21 9/11 bombers were Saudis.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So you have this interesting kind of dynamic between kind of like this kind of like state-sponsored radicalism in other places that's playing out in the Middle East, and certainly I think it's played out domestically in different capacities as well.
Yeah. So what do you think is sort of upcoming with this overall, like, despite all these scandals, but this sort of like, you know, perpetual apathy?
It's hard to say.
In moving forward and like creating something.
I think in some ways it's even a little different than apathy, but a demoralization.
Right.
Whereas there seems to be this kind of like build up, letdown, you know, as Obama, you know, a lot of people back off it now and saying, oh, you know, well, he's just an American president. We couldn't really expect anything to happen. But like, I remember watching Obama be elected the first time and people breaking down crying, you know, and thinking like, okay, finally, there's going to be this so much change and the system is going to actually work in ways that we believe it could, you know. I mean, in certain capacities, like, you know, you can't sit there and say that everything that Obama's done has been negative, has hurt poor people. But for the most part, I don't think it's lived up to what a lot of people thought it would be, you know, even despite the fact that he inherited this horrible kind of economic situation. So I look at it in some senses. I look at Obama's election as, not his election and his campaign, a little bit of a demoralization tactic, you know, and whereas people feel that there aren't the same alternatives. But, you know, everything can only go so far before there's something, the opposite effect begins to happen. So we'll see what happens with that. I do think that down the line, you know, nothing stays the same. Down the line, people will develop these alternatives and start using them for their own benefit.
Let me say that I had my mother, my aunt, and two uncles lived, all of them were born in Louisiana under apartheid, Southern fried apartheid. They, when President Obama was elected, were elated. I, in 2008, went to Louisiana. My uncle was in the hospital on his deathbed, and he, one of the things that kept him alive was President Obama was running for president. And, you know, at that particular time, myself and a nephew of mine were probably the only people, some of the few people in America that weren't really that excited about Obama. And I have a lot of clout in my family because I was the oldest one in one circle, but people were so excited about Obama. I had never seen anything like that before in my life, and but futuristically, I think that you never know what's gonna, you know, a single spark can start a prairie fire, and you know, like one day I lived through the Watts Rebellion, and I remember like once that rebellion took place, everybody claimed to, they flipped their positions. You know, everybody was Malcolm X as opposed to Martin, and everybody was a militant and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And I think something similar is going to happen again. And now, now in terms of the organizational aspect, what organizational aspect is going to take, I really don't know. All I can say is that there's a socialists who are weak. There are anarchists who are weaker. And they are Muslims who are all over the place, just like the anarchists and the Marxists. But I think the people are going to react at some point. But in terms of the leadership, you know, the African People's Socialist Party is they have chapters all over the world. Now, I don't know how many people they have in these particular chapters, but they're, you know, you still have communist parties in Europe, you know, and I think the communists control certain parts of certain states of India. You know, you have China, you have Vietnam, you have, you know, that sort of situation. But I don't know what's going to – I know that there's something's going to take place now. Who's going to lead that? I can't answer that.
Well, I think there's different ways to look at, I guess, uprising, quote-unquote. I think there's a dramatic kind of uprising that, you know, kind of fixes a lot of people's attentions and emotions. But when I look at what China is doing, and I don't look at China as any kind of hero or acting in any interest other than Chinese interest, and not even Chinese people as a whole, but you know, particular groups of people who happen to live in that country. But they're affecting war on the United States economically, you know, in this kind of very slow kind of steady kind of way where they're kind of amassing influence, arranging allies, etc. And, you know, America's in its own way reacting. When you talk about AFRICOM in West Africa, etc., there's definitely this kind of like resource posturing. So that's one of the ways in which I looked at it as a kind of resistance movement, in a sense, to this particular type of hegemony, yeah. Right? But as far as like the kind of like uprising that we've seen on TV, etc., I'm pretty concerned about that in the States in particular, because when you look at who actually has most of the guns, who has most of the training, it's not color people of color, especially in the United in the South, you know. And after that Tarantino movie in particular, there was like a spike in between, I think it was a Newton Brook and the Tarantino movie. There was a spike in gun purchases and when Obama signed that gun law, et cetera.
Right.
And so there is this real kind of mentality of like, oh, you know, helter skelter, et cetera. And the people who are most prepared in that regard, you know, again, aren't people of color. So to think that we're going to see an uprising that way, you know, I'd really like to discourage those ideas.
Right. Well, all I can say is that America is just America. It's only one part of the world, but America's finished, you know, in terms of the
it's falling right now.
Yes, yeah. With the Peter Tosh song, Babylon, your queendom is falling. African Americans, Latinos might be sacrificial lamb, but the imperialism, U.S. imperialism, well, is going to die.
But that's when it's most dangerous, right? When
right, you see, right, that's where example, they get the reaction of when they're falling.
If you've ever encountered like a wounded animal in the woods or something, it's like, and it can't get away, but it's somehow sick or whatever, it will attack you, you know, with everything it has.
Oh, that's gonna happen. But I'm just saying, the imperialism is finished.
I get this. Seems to be that time. I mean, we've been saying that for a long time. Like I remember doing some research and reading an article from the 1970s, and they're like, oh, you know.
It's that's not 1970s until, that's not a long time.
Well, I mean, it's a little, not. I mean, it isn't, but it is, but it isn't. I mean, if you say something, it's done like tomorrow and it's 40 years past, you know. But, yeah, I get the sense that it's like, it's on this downturn. But, you know, the way I look at it is that it's the class that kind of runs these things, they're just going to relocate. You know, it's not like, they're gonna go down with the ship. It's like they just gonna go someplace else and start up all over again, you know. And it'll be another part of the world. It'll be similar type of history unfolding, unfortunately, until we have ways of identifying and responding to those types of tactics. It's just kind of gonna be a replay.
I think the issue is like, what type of social system are we going to have in the world? And I agree with Kwame Ture. There's either we're either going to be capitalist or we're going to be socialist. There's no third way.
Well, not yet. I mean, somebody invented capitalism. Somebody invented socialism.
You can invent something else.
Coke or Pepsi?
I don't believe that. I really don't believe. I believe that history shows that the world is. You had slave society, feudalism, capitalism, and the next is going to be some form of socialism now. It's going to be some form of people are not going to choose capitalism because the majority of people have been oppressed. Capitalism is finished. Huh? I mean, it's finished. Majority of the people don't feel like us in North America. I mean, people are living on like a dollar a day. They're not, you know,
yeah.
They're not for this. For that dog eat dog thing, and they have more sense than we do. The whole egalitarian thing. I think the majority of people in the world are for egalitarianism. Now, I might be wrong. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's where I'm coming from, personally. And I might be wrong. Could be wrong.
Yeah, I hope agree. So. I hope I you're agree. Right, man. You know what I mean? I hope you're right. You, and yeah. I hope that, you know, like the profit motive doesn't dominate the way that it does in if it's interpersonally or if it's in terms of organizing states and resources, et cetera. You know, that'd be wonderful. I don't exactly see how it could happen, but I didn't exactly see how we could have a black president either. So anything's possible, right?
I was like also like going back to, you know, like when Obama was elected in the election. And I think people often forgot because I was around when Bush was basically stole the second election. And I'm just thinking about like sort of the context of when, you know, Obama kind of was elected, was the demoralization, because I was in Detroit at the time when he got elected, when he stole the election the second time.
You're talking Bush.
Bush. Mm-hmm. And allegedly, I guess, I should say.
I'm saying
like... but anyway, like the demoralization that people felt at that time, this is like the context of when, you know, they, you know, basically Obama was put on the plate after Bush left. The difference between that election and Obama is just kind of, when you look at it, it was kind of insane.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he had certain pressures, I guess, he had to respond to, and that, you know, kind of changed him somewhat. But... You know, kind of getting back to Norman's point with the idea of like imperialism. Oftentimes, when the imperialists leave, they do this kind of, I guess, kind of scorched earth thing. You know, whereas, you know, Bush upon his leaving, it just so happened that there's this huge financial crisis. I remember when I think it was when the Portuguese were leaving Mozambique, like they blew up roads and, you know, put things down in the wells and stuff so that this infrastructure wouldn't work, etc. And so, and then the people who come after have a really hard time in a certain regard. And that's, again, part of my concern with the idea of the dying imperialism, where it's like, as it kind of retreats, they destroy things upon those retreats so that people who come after have a really hard time. And we did see that with Obama. And I think that's, again, part of the demoralization tactic.
And I think also it's not just that they're also... yeah, they're on the retreat and they're on the fall, but they are all adapting.
Oh, let me say that. Mm-hmm. And they are also capable of destroying the whole world. let me leave it with that positive thought.
Yeah, thanks for that.
They will.
Uncle Norm, for the happy thought.
They are capable of saying, we can't win, so we just blow it all up. And well, Obama or somebody that loves U.S. imperialism, could be Hillary. It could be some Hispanic. It could be Bobby Jindal, a South Asian American. You know, if they're in control, I mean, that's a possibility too. So I'm not a naive goody-goody guy that everything we're gonna have socialism and live ever after. No, some of these people could destroy the whole planet. That's a fact. Mm-hmm. You know, so. That is a reality as well. So I'm not going to go out there saying that I'm just a naive guy to say we're going to have socialism and we're all going to live happily ever after. So I hate to leave on a negative note.
Anybody know any jokes?
I know. Well, maybe we'll like end on some music. So Norm, do you have any suggestions of stuff that I should put on to end the show?
I wanted to hear St. Thomas. It's on by Sonny Rollins, but you have to go to YouTube and get it. It's St. Thomas is a calypso, and I think
say the track again.
St. Thomas, but I think Sonny Rollins' roots are from St. Thomas is the Virgin Islands. Sonny Rollins. S O N N Y. But Sonny Rollins is a I think his roots are the same as Tim Duncan, I believe, the Virgin Islands. But how many Virgin Islands are there? There's Dutch. I mean, there's three or four different Virgin Islands, right?
Yeah, there's the U.S.
Yeah.
And then I think, there's a Dutch.
Yeah. Well, Sonny Rollins is, I don't know if it's the same as Tim Duncan. Denmark Vesey came out of the who led the rebellion in the U.S.
Still Virgin after all these
years. He came out of the Virgin Islands. But Sonny Rollins, yeah, that's what I wanted to end with, Sonny Rollins.
Okay, cool. So I have it now. So thanks. That was good. That all was right. good. We should do that more often.
All right.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. All right. So I hope everybody, you are listening to Radio Regent. This was a Saturday Morning Live, and we'll see everybody next week.
We'll be right back.
Bye.